welcome to the 27th episode of the Cracker Cast podcast. This is David from MrCracker.com, and it is Monday, the 14th of March. So it's been a long time since I've released an episode of this podcast. So a lot's changed since the last podcast, and you know, a lot's been going on in my life. So I've decided to dedicate this whole episode to talking about me and what's changed in my life. No, I'm just kidding. But first up, we have Anonymous probed for hack threat against WikiLeaker captors. So the Pentagon has asked for an investigation into threats made by Anonymous, and they're threatened to basically harass the two officials in charge of, I guess you could say, abusing Manning. And what's been going on with Manning is he's been in prison in solitary confinement, and some news came out that he's been forced to take off all his clothing for the past few nights, and he has to lay on his floor bare naked in this 6x12-foot room that has a bed, a sink, and a bed, bathroom, a toilet, and a water fountain, and he has to sit in the cold the whole night, and then in the morning he has to stand up naked and like salute the prison guard, you know, that's supposed to check on him or something like that. I don't know. So basically they got a hold of this and they're all pissed off, so now they're threatening to, they're calling it the Operation Radical, and they're saying that they're going to dox the two officials. And what they mean by dox is basically compile and crowdsource a bunch of documentation about the individuals with the goal of using it for mass harassment. And they've been known to do things like report individuals to police for drug or sexual offenses, you know, tricking their ISPs into canceling their service, or messing around with their social security numbers. So there's a whole variety of different trolling techniques, you can call them, that they're supposedly going to do. So yeah, that's what that's about. It must be pretty serious if the Pentagon is requesting, you know, investigation into it. All right, next up we have, let's see here. Student hacked into his high school's grade system like a real-life Ferris Bueller. And for those of you who haven't seen the movie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I believe, it's a very popular film, very old one, but a very cool film. But in the beginning, he, you know, pretends to be sick from school and hacks into his school's computers and changes his absent days, amount of days he had absent, and his grades and stuff. So this guy basically did a very similar thing. He got into his school system and he changed his GPA to a 4.54 grade point average, which pretty much made him the salutatorian. Basically the guy on top of the class. And you know, you'd think that this wouldn't go unnoticed. You know, this one guy who slacks off, doesn't pass in his homework, all of a sudden becomes the top of his class. But you know, it wasn't, I guess. And that, it kind of just shows how great our school system here is in the United States. I'm just kidding. You know, maybe some schools are better than others, but all right, next up we have 4chan students hack district schools and change grades and $9,000 meals. So here's another school hack. Seeing the pattern here, a lot of schools being hacked and getting busted. But this student, or students, basically took a username and password of the school data system that was published on 4chan. And so someone else did the hard work. They kind of just got the password on 4chan. And they used it to, you know, take money from people to change their grades. And some of the things they also did was change school lunch prices to $9,000, and they made it possible to graduate with only one credit. Stupid things like that, kind of like, look at me, I got into your system, come catch me, kind of stuff. But they got busted along with 13 other people that paid these people to raise their grades. The funny thing was that the username and password was admin. The username and the password was poop nugget. Yeah, I'm not sure if 4chan changed the password, or maybe that was the password, but who knows. They've been busted and it's over. All right, next up we have Microsoft Xbox Live Marketplace hacked for $1.2 million. So someone came along and hacked the Xbox Live Marketplace points system. And basically, you spend money to buy points, and the points can get you in-game perks, I guess. You can buy music off the Zune Marketplace and all this good stuff. So someone came along and they cracked the algorithm that was used to generate these codes, and he was able to, you know, he put out the system out to some website, the Tech Game website, and thousands of people started getting points for themselves, generating their own codes and getting points. And overall, they made $1.2 million. Well, Microsoft lost $1.2 million in points. And it says here that $1, one US dollar is about 80 points. So I calculated that this hack was done at least 600,000 times in a short amount of time. I think like 24 hours, I don't know. So about 600,000 times this hack was actually done, and $1.2 million worth of points were stolen or just generated. I wonder if these codes affect the ones in stores. Like, let's say someone actually buys a card in the store for coupons, a coupon card, whatever you want to call it, for points. I wonder if some of these codes that were generated actually interfered with that, and some people's legitimate purchases were not working since the code was already used. Who knows? So that's it for the news this week. Once again, if you'd like to hear all the news compiled for this week, go ahead to my website, MrCracker.com. Look on the right-hand side. There is a opt-in box, newsletter opt-in box for your name and email. Fill that out, click submit. Check your email for a confirmation link. Once you confirm your email address, you will be on my list, and I'll send you an email once a week with all the week's latest and greatest awesome hacker security news. So that's it for the news. Let's get right into the main topic. This week's main topic is going to be about a certain web hacking technique called cross-site scripting. And my goal is to quickly introduce you to cross-site scripting and give you a basic idea of what it is, so you can go from there and kind of expand your knowledge and get into it some more. So, cross-site scripting is basically typically found in web applications, and it enables an attacker to inject client-side script into web pages viewed by other people. And this client-side script is usually JavaScript or HTML. Okay, so knowing this, it makes sense that to really understand cross-site scripting, you should definitely have a better understanding of JavaScript, HTML. And not necessarily, but it'll definitely help if you know PHP, because PHP is the most commonly used programming language to create web applications. So, knowing this, you'll know that if you have access to a web application script, there's good chances it's made in PHP, and you can go through the script, source code, and see for yourself if anything in that source code is actually vulnerable to cross-site scripting attacks. Okay, so let's get into the more interesting stuff. You know that a cross-site scripting attack enables someone to inject client-side scripts into a web application. So where is it injected? Where is it most commonly found, these cross-site scripting attacks, vulnerabilities? Well, the most common places to find this attack is in get parameters and post parameters. And what I mean by that is when you have a form, let's say a search form, and you type something into that search form and you click submit, that information is passed via get or via post. And if it's get, via the get parameter, then you will see everything that you typed into that search form being passed by the URL. So let's say you have a website that has a search little box in it, and you type in cats, and you click submit. If it's passed via the get parameter, then you'll see your the next page. So when you click submit, it'll go to another page. And in the URL bar, you might see something like, you know, website.com/search.php? And then cats. So that's how that term was passed to the search script in the URL. Now, if it was via the post parameter, then it would be passed to the search script, but you wouldn't be able to see it in the URL. So that's get and post parameters. There's also, you can pass it through URLs, cookies, uploaded files, flash scripts. There's a whole bunch of different ways, but the most popular ones are get and post. Everything else you would go after if you couldn't figure anything out with the get and post parameters. So we'll be looking at the get and post parameters in this podcast. So how do you find these vulnerable to cross-site scripting vulnerabilities in the site? Well, if you have access to the source code, so if you're using a popular, web application like, let's say, WordPress or PHP Nuke, then you have access to the source code, so you can go through it, and if you have knowledge of PHP, you can find try to find yourself a certain part of it that's vulnerable to cross-site scripting. If you don't, but you can get a copy of that certain web application for yourself, you can just install it. This also applies to source code, so if you can't find it yourself, you can try to run a couple attacks against your own copy of it and see if you find anything. And this also is a type of fuzzing. When you install something or you just have it, web application somewhere, and you kind of try to run attacks against it yourself, that's a type of fuzzing. But fuzzing in its best form is using a program that has a bunch of different strings that are known to exploit a cross-site scripting attack. And what happens is this program will take these strings and it'll insert into all these web applications, let's say a search box, into the URL, or into this form, and see if it can make a cross-site scripting attack possible. And if it does, then it lets you know and you found that this script is vulnerable. All right, now that we have an example of how to find cross-site scripting vulnerabilities and all this good stuff, let's give you an example of what a cross-site scripting attack looks like. And we'll be looking at two different types, the non-persistent attack and the persistent attack. So the most popular one, mostly not that harmful, but can be very harmful, is the non-persistent attack. And non-persistent means exactly what it means. It means that it doesn't stay. It's just it's temporary. So let's say you have we'll stick with the search example. So you have a search box on a certain website, and in that search box, you type in cat, click submit, it's passed via get, so you see it passed in the URL, and you go to a new page, and let's say that new page says, found zero results for the term cats. So now you know that when you submit cats, it takes your input, and it outputs it on the next page. So this can be a possible attack. Cross-site scripting, a vulnerability right there. So how do you test to see if it's actually vulnerable to cross-site scripting? Well, what you can do is use, let's say HTML, and insert HTML into that search box and click submit. So we can use the header tag, which is the less than sign, H1, and then greater than sign. So that's the H1 tag, the header 1 tag, and what that does is displays the text in a much larger font. So what you can do is type in H1 cats and then close the H1 tag in HTML. Click submit. Now you read the actual results. Does it say cats, but with a bigger font? If it does have it in a bigger font, then you know that this web page is vulnerable to cross-site scripting. So now let's try something more more interesting. Let's try to inject JavaScript. Okay, so to inject JavaScript, you go back to that search page that has a search box, and you type in some JavaScript code. And now you can type in something like the alert function, which simply pops up a text box on the page. So what you will do is use the script alert parenthesis, type in a word like cats, close parenthesis, close script, and click submit. Now, if you don't know JavaScript, you can just Google that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And it's very simple to understand. So if you click submit, and now when the page loads, the second page loads, if you have a pop-up come up with the word cats in it, bam, it's vulnerable to cross-site scripting, and you can inject JavaScript into that web page. So now when you reload that page, every time you reload it, a pop-up comes up with the word cats in it. But if someone else on a different computer goes to that web page, types in cats, click submit, it'll just say zero search results found for a term cats. There won't be any pop-up. That's because it's non-persistent. Only you have that pop-up come up because you're the one who submitted that string into the search bar. So non-persistent attacks don't stay there for everyone else. It's just the person who types in that string. So knowing this, you can also have a non-persistent attack happen on someone else's computer. If you take that final search URL, because as you know, if it's passed via GET, it passes it to the search via the URL, so you'll see it in the URL bar. So if you copy that whole URL that you just made by submitting that JavaScript into the search box and clicking submit, that new URL, if you copy that and you paste it into someone else's, if you copy it and send it to somebody else, and that person clicks on that URL with that certain string in the search, variable, then they'll have that pop-up come up too. But if they, you know, go back to the page and reload it and just type or typing anything into the search bar or just, you know, go to the web page without going through that URL and they click type in cats, then nothing will happen. So that's a non-persistent attack. Now, a persistent attack, on the other hand, it stays there for everybody. So let's show you an example of that. So let's say a web page has a blog, and that blog has comments. And let's say that comment box is vulnerable to a cross-site scripting attack. So if you go to that comment box and you type in, you know, that alert, JavaScript alert code, and you type in, you know, hey, what's up, and then you end that JavaScript code and click submit, it'll paste that comment to the web page, and if it's vulnerable to cross-site scripting, then it'll also execute that code. So now, every time that page is loaded, for anybody, absolutely anybody, that pop-up will come up because now it's actually stored in that database and it's displayed on the web page to everybody. So when everybody goes to that website, that code is processed and bam, that pop-up comes up. So that's a persistent attack because it stayed there. It's always there unless, you know, the person removes that comment. So that's a persistent and non-persistent attack. So, okay, cool. We have stuff popping up, you know, we're changing the font size. Who cares, right? What can you do with that? Absolutely nothing, you know? So then let's look at an attack that actually does something interesting. And the most common type of attack used with cross-site scripting is the cookie stealing attack. And when I say cookie, I don't mean that, you know, chocolate chip cookies I just had 5 minutes ago. I'm talking about the cookies that your browser uses to store information about you. So let's say you go to a website and you log in, and then you check the box that says remember me, and you click submit. Well, next time you close the browser and come back to that website, you'll still be logged in. And up until you actually log out or your cookie expires. So what happens is that browser, that website creates a cookie that tells it to stay alive, keep your session alive for this amount of time. And sometimes websites allow you an option to specify how long. Keep me logged in for a week, keep me logged in for a month. And that cookie will store your session, and it'll store the amount of time that it should stay alive. Anyways, once that time is expired, your cookie expires, and bam, you're logged out. So, you can actually see your cookie. You can see it straight from the browser using JavaScript, or you could actually just go into your, you know, browser settings and check out your cookies that are stored at the moment for every site. And how can you actually see your cookie straight from the browser using JavaScript? Well, go to a website, let's say Gmail, log in, and then in the browser URL bar, type in JavaScript, colon, and then type in alert, parenthesis, document.cookie, close parenthesis, and then semicolon. And then click submit, and you'll have a little pop-up that comes up that has your cookie information in it. Well, seeing that you can, you know, view your cookie information right from JavaScript, couldn't you view somebody else's? Yes, you could. And what you'd have to do is find the cross-site scripting vulnerability in, say, you know, like for example, that search example we used. When you click submit, when you type in JavaScript into that search term, click submit, it displayed it, that alert, in the next page. Well, you could take that URL and remove the code you submitted, and instead of that code that you just submitted that, you know, popped up that cat message, you can type in code that would get the user's cookie and then redirect it and send it to another web page that stored that cookie, and then from that web page automatically redirect it back to the website, so all that just happened in between will never be seen by the victim. So that's an example of a actual cross-site scripting attack that does something interesting. So then, once you have that user's cookie stored, you can actually go access that page that has it all stored, find his session ID, copy it, and then go into your cookies on your web browser, edit that cookie for that website, and replace your session with that user's session ID, and then reload the page, and bam, you're logged in as that user. And you never had to know his password. So that's a really cool attack, commonly used by the cross-site scripting attack. And, you know, there's a whole amount of simple tutorials out there documenting this whole attack from start to finish, along with all the code that you need to actually execute that attack. So go ahead, check it out, find some tutorials for that attack and see if you can actually replicate it yourself. It's very simple and very rewarding once you finish it. And use these cross-site scripting attacks to learn something, you know, about web security. Now that we know what a cross-site scripting attack is, and you're about to go out and do it for your own, I'll give you two simple Firefox extensions that will help you execute this attack. The first one is the Web Developer Toolbar, and this toolbar basically gives you an easy way to edit your cookies. It also shows you in a simple kind of format all the inputs in a website, all the hidden inputs, just a bunch of different places that you might be able to try out your cross-site scripting attacks. And then there's the Hackbar, and this is also an extension for the Firefox browser. And the Hackbar is an easy way to modify get and post requests, so it just makes, you know, the whole trying out the attack against certain inputs very easy. So go ahead and install those two extensions, the Hackbar and the Web Developer Toolbar, and start trying out the cross-site scripting attacks on your own. And once again, the better you understand the JavaScript, the more you can do with this attack type. So definitely give that a shot, you know, try to learn some of that stuff. There's also a bunch of tutorials online for that. So that's it for this week's main topic. This week's hacker website is sectools.org, sectools.org, and it is a top 100 network security tools list. And the main page has the top 100 in general, so just all network security tools in general, and then it has certain categories, top categories of security tools like password crackers, sniffers, vulnerability scanners, web scanners, wireless hacking, exploitation, packet crafters, and just some more. So if you're looking into some great tools, go to this website. It'll also help you open up into a bunch of new attack types just by checking out these tools and trying them out yourself. So check them out. You might find something new, something you like more than you've been using, maybe. But yeah, great site run by a great person. And if you have any suggestions of great security/hacker websites out there, please feel free to email me, comments@mrcracker.com. I've been doing this for a while, so, you know, the list keeps growing of websites I've already completed. Not completed, but actually just, you know, put out there and recommended. So it's getting tougher finding good websites out there. So if you have any suggestions or know of any websites, you know, feel free to email me once again, comments@mrcracker.com. That's it for episode 27 of the Cracker Cast podcast. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to email me at comments@mrcracker.com. Anything at all, I will either answer you, maybe read it on the show, just anything at all. And that's it, I believe. I guess I'll see you next week or the week after that. In the meantime, happy hacking.